Hello, everyone, and welcome to Vortex Network News, broadcasting live from Sedona, Arizona, in the launching pad today. And with me is my co-host. Today he's going to help me out with some of the nitty-gritty here in science and physics as Dr. Houdini.
Well, good morning, Aurora.
Good morning. So we're going to kick it around a little bit here about what's the state of affairs. And we're going to interview a couple of very interesting gentlemen that you connected with recently and that I've had on. Bill,
yes,
why don't you introduce our audience to these two
and
gentlemen.
David D. Hilster.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you because I was talking.
Greg?
Could you introduce him again? Because I was talking while you were introducing. So, please, Bill.
Okay. Greg Voke and David Hilster.
Hi there. Can you hear us okay?
Yep, yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for being with us. Now, let's give our audience a little background on these two gentlemen and what they're up to here. We've got an event coming up in L.A. that we're going to be attending. And what's the date on that?
June 23rd, which is Wednesday, through June 26th, Saturday, in Long Beach, California, at the University of Long Beach.
Now, this is an annual event that you guys put on, correct?
Yes.
And this is your 17th?
Yes, it's the 17th conference for the Natural Philosophy Alliance.
Now, tell us about the Natural Philosophy Alliance. What is that? What's that all about for those people who are not familiar with it?
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and take this. This is Greg, by the way. And
okay, hi, Greg.
What it is, it's an organization of scientists who have, and people interested in the foundations of physics who take alternative views or independent views, if you will. They are not to be dictated to by the constraints of mainstream science. Which isn't to say that we don't value mainstream science, because there's certainly a lot of valuable things to be had there. But it's a group of people who are challenging some of the theories in relativity theory, for example, or quantum mechanics, or areas in the actual structure of matter is another big topic, and really anything having to do with physical science. And we get together once a year to share our ideas. We write papers and then present them. It's a regular scientific conference.
And so it's natural what again?
Natural philosophy. The reason that name was chosen
is because natural philosophy rather than physics. I was surprised.
Natural philosophy is the word that was used, in the time of 17th century, for example, you know, when Newton was coming up with his ideas, and that until really the late, the 20th century, that was still the term that was used rather than science. It's a broader term, and it involves part of what's wrong in physics today isn't just about math and just about formulas in that narrow sense, but there's some fundamentally philosophical issues that have not been resolved properly, and so we need to take a step back and look at the philosophy behind the science as well as the mathematics.
Yeah, I think
so. That's why the broader name is more appropriate.
I see. Okay, now, I think it's a real mistake that we've been making for a long time to pretend like we know what's going on, when in reality we're discovering new things every day that changes everything that we believed in before. So what's your feelings on that? I mean, that's my feeling.
I'll let David answer that. Go ahead, David.
Actually, I'd like to add to that, and that is, it's not only new things, but it's also old things. One of the things about the NPA, the Natural Philosophy Alliance, is that people sort of started it with the intention of saying, look, we've looked at some of the foundations of physics and cosmology, and there are some fundamental problems there. Even though there are new things also, we talk about new things, there's also fundamental problems where where these scientists have identified when they really step back and looked at things. When you see and you hear about time changing, it's such an absurd concept at times when you think about it at a fundamental level. And many thousands of people around the world have been looking at this. They've come to many of the same conclusions, and they said, we really have to start, you know, looking at the basics of what, like Greg said, at the turn of the century or the 20th century is when a lot of these problems really were introduced, that modern science, where people became more powerful than the science itself. It didn't really matter what truth was. It was a matter that we look smart and we say we know everything. And you hit it on the head in the sense that we have a real problem in science today, where we say we know all kinds of things and we don't, whether it be things that were fundamental, like, oh, we know what light is. We have no idea what light is. We know what gravity is. We have no idea what these fundamental things are. And yet there are also new things coming along, and when you put them all together, you get these thousands of scientists around the world who have really come to many of the same conclusions and finally are starting to come together, and that's what the MPA and this conference is about.
Well, you know, all my life I always thought that people were trying to tell me the way I should think rather than just saying, this is the way I think. They were always trying to say, well, this is the way you should think. And, you know, I thought, well, that's rather limiting if I'm limited to the way everyone else thinks. And, you know, and I have to go by some preset standard that they purport. It doesn't leave a lot of room for discovery, does it?
No. No, and I think one of the things is that it really has a lot to do, and this is one of the things about in my documentary that we look into somewhat, and that is people in universities, their goal is to basically, in the end, put food on the table. They need to make a living. And making
and
a living
tenure
is more important than truth.
And you get
and so
tenure, and you do not get tenure by rocking the boat.
Exactly. And what happens is, the way you get, you know, and we can talk about that a little bit more, but when we approached and we were filming high school students, juniors, at the high school level, and this was advanced physics, the juniors were all gung-ho on truth, and if Einstein's wrong, I'm going to fight and I'm going for it. By the time we got to the seniors, half of the seniors were saying already, some of them were already booked to go to MIT and, you know, Carnegie Mellon and other places like that, and they already said, look, you know, I don't want to give up even my ability to go to MIT by rocking the boat. If they say Einstein's right and they say general relativity, special relativity are the right correct things, the Big Bang's correct, you know, even though I may not think that, they're already at the high school level, going into college, already positioning themselves politically to get themselves a job, to have that name. And so what happens is, again, they're putting truth behind making a living. It's really not a conspiracy. It's just more of a complacency, and to have someone stand up, again, they don't want to rock the boat.
Yeah,
to get back to your question, your comment earlier about people, you know, trying to force you how to think, I don't really think that anybody deliberately is going out of their way to, you know, make Aurora think a certain way. But you know, there are
there's pressure on them
among these higher up, and in order to advance in certain ways, I mean, they have to set criteria to do that, and those criteria become, you know, I guess over time more and more rigid.
Yes.
And so, you know, we
I agree.
They
kind of write it in
stone,
you
know? It really is.
Yeah, they write it in stone, and then, you know, you must digest it and spit it back out the way they see fit. Otherwise,
right,
you're not
going to
get a good grade. You're not going to get a good grade in their class if you're not dancing to the beat.
Yeah, I'd like to just emphasize that, you know, independent thinkers are not necessarily, you know, people, you know, totally, you know, divorced from the rest of the world. These are, you know, people from all walks of life. In fact, what's really interesting to me about
they're just rejected by most of the world, not divorced.
Well, no, and they're not. I mean, we got people from all walks of life. And what I was going to say is about a third of the people that are involved actively with the NPA are actually in academia. I mean, they're professors in physics and engineering and things like that. So, you know, they're not.
We have stepped out of the line, so to speak.
Well, perhaps. I'll give an example. Tom Phipps is one of my heroes, and he's going to be one of the people we're going to be awarding this Sanyak Award to, and we'll talk about that later. But
let's hear about that. What kind of guys can you, inspire us by hearing about that are going to be there at the conference that have stepped outside the box and so to speak?
Well, if I can use Tom Phipps as an example, this is a guy who was educated at Harvard, one of the most brilliant people I've ever known. In the 1940s, he worked under Norman Ramsey, who is a Nobel Prize laureate, and he worked, did a number of high-level government contract work through the 50s and 60s. His own father was one of the people who did research, Tom Phipps Sr., in the 1920s. Exploring and measuring the magnetic pole of the hydrogen atom. This is in the days of Stern and Gerlach in the 1920s. So, and he's been around this stuff all his life. He was born in 1925. And yet, at some point in the late 70s, early 80s, he made some discoveries about electrodynamics that he found that Heinrich Hertz had made some different mathematical approach to electrodynamics than had been treated by Maxwell and was carried on over into the work through Einstein. And somehow this work got neglected. He rediscovered it and has been working on it for 30 years. He's published hundreds of articles in non-mainstream publications. And here's a guy, who can put his credentials up against anybody. And there's a lot of people like him. And yet, he's not able to get his material, that's controversial, published. Although he's had many things published in mainstream journals, but not on these subjects, not on the controversial subjects. So there's a lot of people like that who have published in mainstream journals, but are not getting their controversial material published. And so they have to find alternative sources to do that.
There's some other people that are going to be there, too, especially on the public day, which, again, we encourage everybody to come by in the L.A. area, Southern California area. And two of the people that are favorites of mine are Ron Hatch, who is a world-renowned in GPS. He has probably, I believe he has 12 to 15 patents in GPS. He's made
now
himself,
what's GPS?
How do you say? I'm sorry?
What's GPS?
GPS is global positioning satellites.
Oh, okay.
And so one of the things about that is I'm making a documentary called Einstein Wrong. I've been filming this for over 5 years. We're going to be filming at the convention also. We're finishing that up. Hopefully post-production will be done this year. But one of the things they said in the year 2005, which was the 100th anniversary of Einstein, was that the journals were given a story. Okay, it's the physics year of physics by the United Nations, go out and do a story. One of the things you heard over and over and over in 2005, because they had very little to go on with Einstein, because there's very little practicality, there is no really practical applications of it, was GPS, global positioning, the stuff that tells you where you are in your car. If it wasn't for relativity and calculating relativity correctly, your car would be off by miles. Well, here's a guy who is not only got 12 to 15 patents in that area, and also has actually made some money in that area. Comfortable. He's one of the few people who stands up and says, look, we are not using it. Something else is going on, but it isn't the relativity that we're being taught. So here's a guy, who we have at this convention saying this against what you hear in classrooms all around the world, in physics classrooms and universities and high schools everywhere, that GPS is using relativity all the time and those calculations have to be there, and that's not true. The other person that's going to be even, I think, a little bit more controversial, and I'm really happy to have him, he's somewhat a celebrity in a different way, is Neil Adams. And Neil Adams, I met back in the end of 2007 when I saw his videos of the expanding Earth on the Internet. And it blew me away, and I started looking into that subject, and I bought almost every book out there on the subject, and when I saw the evidence for this, it was just overwhelming. I couldn't go back.
It only makes sense. I always thought it was true because, when the Earth is spinning so fast, everything expands that does that twirls around usually. winds up expanding that I know of, but as far as vortexes go and things of that nature. But what do you think about then the the concept of the expanding Earth? I agree is a reality, and Bill, of course, he has strong feelings about
that
as well.
Well, the Earth is not only expanding, but it's also hollow.
That's what I wanted to bring up too. You know, what do you think about having somebody on about the hollow Earth? Have you ever kicked that around?
Well, Neil, if you know Neil Adams, I believe believes the Earth is hollow.
Okay.
There are different theories, and those are. And again, to me, it's not that I believe or don't believe. I like to look at everybody's idea. Some people think it's a thermonuclear going on in the middle. You know, oil is coming up, water. That's the, I mean, a lot of explanations we know of are coming inside from inside. But Neil believes he has his what he calls a prime matter particle theory, and that talks about this idea of the. He bases it on the idea of this formation of matter. By I believe it's electrons and positrons coming together, and he has this theory about, and it involves the Earth being hollow, that geodes, that you know, a lot of these things, geodes themselves are growing from inside out. So that's his theory. So we actually, having Neil Adams there, he subscribes to the hollow Earth theory,
well,
and others have subscribed, like Alexander Scarborough has a different idea. He thinks it's thermonuclear. But regardless, the expansion part, the evidence is quite overwhelming. And Neil Adams is a character in himself because he's a New Yorkian, world famous, comic book artist. And so, you know, a lot of people don't treat him with the respect he really, really should get, and not necessarily have to agree with his theory of primatic particles, but his fight. He is actually, his videos of the expanding Earth have hit millions and millions of views, and to have him there and come and talk, it's going to be quite fun, because he's very cantankerous, but you know, he'll fight for the truth up and down. And I think that's another thing that we all have to get over, and that is, you don't have to have a PhD from Harvard in physics to be a person that can come up with something important in science. Even Einstein himself, which we put up as the biggest guy in science from the 20th century, he was a patent clerk. He didn't go through the same system. We sort of forget those kinds of things. So at the conference, we got even one guy giving a paper on gravity. He is an ex Supreme Court judge from Canada, Duncan Shaw. So you get we have to get over this idea. Everybody's a scientist. We all think about how the universe works. It used to be in the turn of the century. I talked to somebody in England at one time, and he said, "Dave, you know, at the turn of the century, it used to be that you know, philosophers, poets, musicians, scientists, and artists all got together and they all talked. And the artists had just as much right to talk about philosophy and science
there
as
has
the
always been
scientists
bohemians.
Got to talk about artists. We don't do that anymore."
Yes, there's always been bohemians, I think, in every society that, you know, the 1 or 2%, the couple of percent of society that actually is willing to think about these things as well as stand up and speak their beliefs on it in front of everyone. Now, that's where it takes some courage. You know, I have a theory about the solar system's formation. You know, if you look at the planets and the size of them, and as you, it seems as you go from the sun to the out further, the planets get larger and larger and larger. And that's my theory, is because of their orbit and their spin creates a more dynamic force that creates a larger mass. And
actually, having Jupiter and Saturn and the larger planets further out creates greater stability for the orbits of the planets that are further in.
I think it's like all in divine order, you know, that there is a balance to nature, and that is observable. If you can tune into it, you can see this perfect balance that really exists. So now a lot of people are talking about a new day in science that we're on the crest of. What's your feelings on that?
Can I jump in on this one? This is Greg again. I would like to, first, if I may, address a couple of points that David raised earlier. He mentioned artists, and I just wanted to say that we have a couple of people who are coming to science from the perspective of art. One name that comes to mind is Michael Evans. He's, I think, a genius. He's just doing this unbelievable artwork that he calls a Trion Ray that he'll be displaying on public day. You'll get a chance to see that as well.
Oh, great. I love art. I'm an art major myself.
Yeah, he is not really a mathematician, but he invented something years ago in the 1970s called space clusters. You can pick them up in museums still today, and they're fun to play with, and you can create all these unbelievable geometric shapes. But interestingly, through playing with these shapes, basically they're sticks that bend, that come into various nodes, he has made some interesting discoveries about just the geometry of how things move and how things relate to each other and how these bends are very important, and created this thing he calls a Trion Ray. I'm still not quite sure what that all means, but I'm open to the idea that there could be something to that as somehow being a form of structure that we need to study, because these geometric relationships, people like Buckminster Fuller did a lot of study on this. I think they're more or less neglected even now. I mean, I don't know, they're considered not to be important, I don't know what, but some of these just simple geometric ideas could be very fundamental and very significant to understanding how matter is organized and things like that. So that's my two bits on artwork. Then I'd like to address another issue that David raised, and he said something about Ron Hatch and that the GPS systems do not use Newtonian physics as opposed to Einsteinian physics. And the point that David was making in that context was that there really is nothing that we can lay our hands on that relativity theory, Einstein's theory of relativity, has actually done for mankind. I mean, it's a great theory, and everybody bows their head to it. But in fact, there are very few important anything that has come out of it in terms of useful technologies. On the other hand, there was a man who was a contemporary of Einstein who almost nobody knows anything about. His name was Georges Sagnac, and he worked with the Curies, Madame Curie, in France.
I've heard about this guy.
Yeah, Sagnac made a very important discovery in 1913, just 3 years before Einstein's general theory of relativity came out. And this discovery was that if you take a beam of light and you pass it around a path, a circular, or just any kind of enclosed path, and you have another beam of light following the other direction, through the series of mirrors, and then you take the whole apparatus and you rotate it on a platform, that you will actually get a fringe difference, unlike the famous Michelson-Morley experiment. That is extremely significant. It's used in that information, and that technology is used in the GPS system. It actually is. It's used in a lot of stability important equipment, that requires very high precision in electronics. It's used in a lot of things that you'd be surprised how useful that application has been in location detection, things like that. And yet, Sagnac is completely unknown. That effect is not talked about. And there's something out of sync here. We get all this press for Einstein and so little press for something that has so much usefulness.
It seems like if you're working with gravity and your equations don't reduce down to Einstein's general relativity, it gets automatically rejected.
Sure.
I took a different approach to it, when I was doing some work in this a few years back, and I came up with a very accurate answer for computing the shift, the frequency shift on GPS satellites. I was stunned.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's...
You need to have this written down somewhere.
It's not general relativity. And it's, it's on my website over there at intellect.com. It's one page where I compute what the shift frequency is, and it's practically dead on. And there's no general relativity whatsoever, which causes my eyes to go crossword.
Well, you know, it doesn't surprise me in the least, because I think there's a number of ways to derive the same formulas, and it doesn't make the derivation, you know, it doesn't make the philosophy behind the derivation correct just because you get the right answer. And so there are more, there are always more than one right way to get, more than one way to get a right answer. So.
So now this is a type of conference that people can come to who are very advanced along these lines, as well as people who are just beginning to explore this information as well, right?
Yeah, that is one of the good things, and that Greg brought that up. And it really is bringing back this thing I talked about with this one gentleman in Europe. You know, if you don't, there are people who are more mathematical, and there are people, and they understand that. There are other people that are more visual. And we have all those things. We have people, there's a whole structures group that is just fascinating. My mother, in the movie Einstein Wrong, this documentary, I took her in 2005, who didn't know anything about anything in this area, and just like any layman, she's not a scientist or anything, and I've taken her on this journey. And she, in 5 years, is now a part. She has no problem. She said in the beginning, you know, a lot of stuff would go over her head. The things that were visual, she really enjoyed. But after you sort of hang around, you start to realize, you break down your own barrier that I can't understand this. If a person, there's so much there that if you just relax and just let it come in and say, okay, I'm not going to get it the first time. Even if you know math, like myself, I have a degree in mathematics, you can see an equation, what it really means. It takes some time for you to understand that. But what's good about the conference is we have artists, we have people who are doing the visual side, we have animations, like with Neil Adams has his animations, we have the public day, and so there's a lot of variety there, and it really comes from the diverse backgrounds of the people. I mean, if you look at the backgrounds of the people, they just run the gamut, and one of the things I hear constantly in the last few years, I've been helping organize this more and more, and Greg has too, is I've heard literally guys doing amazing work come up to me and says, well, you know, Dave, I'm not a scientist. And I said, of course you are. I said, no one cares. No one cares about your degree. When a person is talking, they're caring about what you're saying and what it means. And so it's very nice to finally go to a conference where you don't feel, when you're standing, somebody's brilliant in math or brilliant in structure or brilliant in cosmology or physics, that you don't feel intimidated. People do not, it's not like going to a mainstream conference where, okay, little boy, stand off in the corner. We're going to say things that you have no idea to understand, and it would take you decades. And that's
right.
It's just such a wrong attitude. And this conference is really a breath of fresh air. And that's, we're trying to, and in the documentary, we take my family, who goes from an ordinary family to a family that now puts science back into their lives. When we used to talk about the universe, you know, we used to,
yes,
when we're kids, we all look up in the sky,
yeah,
and we all dream.
My father,
we've thrown that away. We've given it to the scientists, and they say, you know, I know this. I have so much. I have $1 billion. You know, a $9 billion machine, the Higgs particle machine. Go away, little boys and girls. We do our work. No one's going to understand it. You have to trust us, and that's where we've gone wrong.
Right. Yeah, I'm in total agreement with that. Well, this is our first one that are attending, Bill and I, and we're all excited about it. Looking forward to meeting all these new people and exploring all the options that they bring to the table. It sounds like it's going to be quite a potpourri to choose from.
Yeah, I noticed John Maluski's going to be there. And I've taken an interest in his work.
Yeah,
yeah,
and Bill's going to be
We're hoping he's going to make a demonstration for us on Saturday. I'm just going to get that lined up.
Bill's going to be bringing a new, what would you call it, a new invention of sorts with you?
Well, I'll tell the people about it when I get there. You know?
Save the suspense, right?
Well, it's interesting. It's for helping the process that John Maluski first brought to our attention, which is the process of microwaving dirt to retrieve precious metals. Mm-hmm. You know, we call it mineral reclamation. And this mineral reclamation involves microwaving. And
What I have is I developed this thermal bottle that you can put in microwave ovens, and it's a process that it's like no miner has ever heard of.
Right, we go to mining stores and they're going, what? Huh? No, I never heard of anything like that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can microwave this stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. So. Yeah, that's going to be, I mean, that's one of the other things you were talking about, you know, with the general public and they come in. And, you know, all these things are very accessible. I think one of the other things I think that's really great that, and Greg has really been instrumental in this, and that is bringing the tinkerers, the Edisons and the people who do things in the garage, the old, we see this in the films all the time. The guy in his own garage doing these amazing things, and a lot of the advances in science actually come from these people. We're putting together, the NPA is full of people who do great theory. I mean, really amazing theory. I know Greg can back me on that one. But a lot of times they're lacking in the experimental side. And then when you go to the experimentalists, they'll use sort of terminology, maybe a little bit loosely. They may be a little less, they're very apt at making amazing machines and things that are happening. And I think both sides need each other. The theorists need these people to say, hey, look, I've got this idea, and look, this guy over here is showing that this idea really is a good idea to look at. And experimentalists a lot of time are doing things, you know, and maybe their explanation, the theorists can help and sit down. So one of the things we're looking at this conference is we're getting together groups that used to be sort of subgroups in science, like the Tesla people, the MPA, which is more theoretical, the new energy people, and the expanding earth people. These kinds of people that have sort of been separate from each other are now starting to come together, and they're starting to say, oh, you know, we have some of our video conferences every Saturday, these scientists in our database, and the tinkerers are saying, you know, this theoretical stuff, I'm really, yeah, this is really making me understand more of what I'm actually doing in my lab. And then the theoretical people are saying, wow, you're doing this, I need to take a look at that in my theory, I need to be able to explain what I see. So that sort of, one of the things I think this conference is unique is that, and again, Greg has been really putting a lot of effort into this, is the bringing these really diverse individuals together. And I think as long as everybody keeps an open mind and says and listens,
now, Greg,
I've only seen positive things go on.
Who are some of these people then? You know,
let's go over some of the speakers. For our morning audience, we have, first of all, we have speakers listeners, all over the world who are listening to us have this discussion and will be in the future going to our archives. So, you have a website that I'd like you to give out as well as, and we'll have a link to that on our website. And I have you listed under upcoming events, too, on our website. So people can go to Vortex Network News, upcoming events. You'll see a link there to your to the NPA website. Right. And can we just briefly talk about some of the speakers and what they're going to be talking about? We've had a few of them, but there's a few more I'd like you to talk about.
Well, let me, if I may, I wanted to piggyback on a couple of things David said, but I'll answer your question first so I don't forget.
Okay, go ahead, whatever suits you.
Well, David already mentioned that there are four main speakers that we're going to be having on public day, four invited speakers, and three of them I think you already mentioned. Ron Hatch is an expert on GPS systems, is going to be talking about Newtonian physics versus Einsteinian physics. And then we're going to have Neil Adams, as he mentioned, the world-famous Batman
The day that's open to the public is which day?
That's Saturday. We want to just explain that the rest of the conference is also open for people who want to attend.
Okay.
There is a conference registration, but Saturday is open for free to anybody who wants to just come and say, hey, you know, what is this all about? We're gearing it to the public. The conference itself, which is a series of scientific presentations, is going to be taking place Wednesday through Friday, and there'll be concurrent sessions going on in a couple of different rooms all day long. People will be presenting the information from their papers. And so if you're interested in that, you can. The public can attend that as well. They would need to register for the conference.
All right, let's talk about the registered conference speakers, some of those people that they can, when they sign up, they're going to get a little education on a variety of topics.
Well, let me explain. I try to finish. There's four speakers for Saturday. Let me finish that, if I could. Neil Adams, we mentioned. We also mentioned. I don't think we mentioned Bill Beatty, who is he's kind of our mad scientist. So he's going to come and do some really interesting demonstrations. The things that he's done, a lot of these have been posted on YouTube. Millions of people have seen, or millions of views, I should say, unless it's the same person over and over again. I don't know, but anyway, of his really really neat demonstrations. He's got one that where he's got a couple copper tubes that he rotates around, and because that generates, if you think of the electrons in the conductor sloshing around, that creates a magnetic field which actually levitates a magnet. So he'll actually do that physically in person and talk about what is it like to be a scientist as opposed to just a tinkerer, I guess, in physics. And the fourth speaker on Saturday is going to be, we were going to have Michael McCoubrey, and he had to bow out, and we're going to have in his place Frank, and I'm drawing a blank on his last name.
Gordon?
Frank Gordon. He's going to be coming in to speak on cold fusion, and I forgot his last name there, but he's actually been in the field since the beginning, since 1989, with the discovery of the cold fusion effect. Or they, in the business, they like to call it a low energy nuclear reaction, but the public generally knows it as cold fusion. So that's a big news item too. So those are our four main speakers on Saturday. Let me talk now, if I could, about the conference proper. Scientific conferences are often done is that people have to submit papers. And I wanted to say this in connection with what David said earlier, connecting the experimenters with the theorists. We really want to encourage the experimenters to write disciplined scientific papers and to put them in a proper format that is acceptable to the scientific community so that, you know, we could say, okay, here's the documents, here's the equipment that we used, and here's the test that we ran, and here's A and here's B, and the only difference between A and B is this variable, and here's the results that we got quantified, you know, and now we can, the theorists can do something with that. But if we just say, well, here's a video on YouTube, isn't this cool, that's not as useful because we can't grab that and say, oh, you know, I can build a theory out of that as much. So this is what we really want to encourage, is a little bit more of that. If anyone has an experiment that they actually performed and can get quantified and disciplined and rigorous about it, can write up a scientific report, we want to include those kinds of papers in our proceedings. But anyway, too late for this year, but certainly for next year. This year we have 121 scientific papers that have been submitted, and I think about maybe 7 or 8 of them are experimental papers. So it's not as many as we'd like, but and about a third of those, that would be about 40, were written by authors from outside the United States and Canada, which means, see, this is not just a local phenomenon. This is a worldwide thing. People all over the world are finding, exploring different paradigms and different approaches to science in many different ways. And the topics cover the map. We got relativity theory. We got, quantum structure. We got, a few things, ideas on geology and things like that. It's just really, it's an amazing diversity.
You had mentioned the two things, the website. The website is sort of is how this whole thing really got organized and got so big. We have almost 1,800 scientists worldwide. We have, I think, from over 60 countries. And the database is www.worldsci.org.
Now, can anybody be a scientist who wants to be one?
Yes, if you are doing work that is all we look at is if you are serious about the work and trying to do it in a serious manner, we are happy to create a profile. We help create that profile, and no one can just go in there. So, you just can't have people spamming it. But we have over 1,800.
With your approval, in other words. These people who are on there with your approval.
Well, it's not approval. It's just make sure we have to have some control because, today on the internet, everybody, next thing you'll have advertising in there and people putting in, whatever. If a person's interested, they contact us. We have no problem. It's really not a judging as much as just a screening for just spam and that kind of thing.
Oh, that's cool.
And, I'm sorry?
I said, that's really cool that you're doing it that
way.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. And we have all the, you know, the whole, the gamut there. And you had also asked the question, you know, who is there at the conference that would be interesting maybe for the public? Well, these people are unknown, but to us they were known. Two of my favorite people and speakers there, one is bringing his experiment.
We don't expect him to be on, you know, Entertainment Tonight.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. One of them is really a guy I just met, really got to know his work in the last couple of years. He's Dr. Edward Dowdy. And he is a NASA scientist. And he is out there campaigning to show that gravity and light, in fact, don't interact. The light that bends is only at the corona of suns. It's not because of space-time bending. As soon as you get outside the corona of a sun, the light goes straight. And according to special relativity, it should bend a little bit. As you get further away, it bends less and less. And so here's a NASA scientist out there saying, look, we don't see general relativity where we're supposed to. And that's a hush-hush kind of thing. And that's quite amazing. And I was sort of blown away by that because we have, obviously, I always thought that, you know, gravity and light interacted, and in case it doesn't. Another person I think that is Francisco Mueller. He is a professor in a university. He does electrical engineering kind of things, and he is actually shipping. He couldn't get it on the plane because they don't allow this stuff with the terrorists. He's shipping all this magnets, and he's doing this induction type of experiment that's going to show special relativity wrong with a very simple experiment. Now, that's quite profound. I mean, that's amazing. And another person that I think is going to be also amazing, especially for the public, is another person I happened to find a couple years ago, and his name is Ed Sakota. And he is actually, he got famous for making an investment banking computer program back in the 80s. But he was sitting in a hot tub at the end of the 1990s and put his hand to a jet in the hot tub and noticed it sucked it in and didn't push it out. He thought that was weird and ended up finding that the Bernoulli effect, the idea that faster moving fluid over a surface creates less pressure and that's how a plane flies, is actually wrong. He has an experiment that he claims it costs $10 that you can show the Bernoulli effect is not correct, that he has something called radial momentum. So here you've got the Bernoulli effect, which we all supposedly learned in school, with $10 experiment showing it wrong. We've got a guy with a simple experiment showing special relativity wrong. And we have this guy, general relativity, from a NASA scientist, brave enough to get up there and stand. So there's really a lot of interesting people, and these people are going to be talking during the week, not on public day, although Francis Mueller will have his experiment on public day showing special relativity wrong. He'll be showing that. So there's a lot of interesting speakers. And on the website, it's conf, C-O-N-F, 17, that's conference17.worldmpa.org. You can go there and you can see all the people and all the papers and get an idea, pictures of them and bios, and they're all linked back to our database.
I'd like to chime in, if I could,
sure.
With a couple more. That because you're Vortex News, I just thought I'd mention that there are several people that are going to be presenting at this conference that are going to be talking about topics related to vortexes.
Well, I came into that name about 30 years ago.
Okay.
And channeled it when I was, still in diapers, actually. And there I was, meditating and getting this picture of vortexes, of these energy points that these vortexes actually propel a lot of the universe in a way, you know, and the vortex theory, I think, is going to be expanded upon as time goes on.
So right. Well, there is certainly some debate as to what is spinning, but what seems to be clear to a lot of people is that something is spinning, and in fact that at the fundamental level there are circuits, there are things that spin, and you know we all know, we've been told by mainstream science that that the fundamental particles have angular momentum vectors, and that and yet we're told that these are intrinsic to the properties. Well, you know, anybody that ever has performed an experiment, I mean, if you know if you have a magnetic moment, that means that you've got a current that's circulating, you know, surrounding some kind of an area. And so, you know, there's a lot of people that are in the NPA who are saying that the circuit is very fundamental. It's very foundational, and there are vortexes associated with every circuit. And circuits can only connect with each other in so many ways. There are so many ways to tie the knot, as you will. And so knot theory and circuit theory and vortex theory and toroids and all these kinds of things are related to each other. They're related to the very structure of matter. Some of the people that will be there talking about that are Vladimir Ginzburg. He's been active with the NPA for a number of years and has developed some really interesting ideas related to toroids. Another man is Stoyan Sarg, who is, I believe he's from Bulgaria originally, but he's now a professor of physics in Canada. And he's got a gravitational anomaly that he'll be showing Saturday also. It's related to his vortex theories. Marco Rodin is going to be there displaying his Rodin coil. And he has some very interesting ideas that are ultimately related to toroids and vortices. I actually had a paper that I didn't get a chance to finish, but I'll be talking about some things in my display on toroids as well. So there's a whole lot of people that are interested in that idea from a theoretical point of view, as well as from, you know, trying to discover some practical outputs of this sort of ideas. So
that sounds so fascinating.
Interesting idea,
really.
The connection with what you're doing.
It really sounds fascinating. How many people have you had there in the past at your events, at your conferences?
I was at the third NPA meeting when I was just a puppy, as they say. I was in Flagstaff, Arizona. I met a lot of the founding people of the NPA. And at that time, there was not the internet to help them out as much, those kinds of things. So the group it would range, the NPA itself in the beginning would be as little as maybe 15 or 20 people. And as the years gone on, it's gotten closer and closer to 100 people, until the point where really the problem now is trying to fit them in the times we have. We have it go, and it stores Connecticut. It's been on the East Coast every other year, and now we're trying to do the West Coast, and we'll be back on the East Coast next year. But, we're having to now grow this. So the membership of the MPA is in the hundreds, and the people that are now coming to the conferences themselves are getting to that number. And so, it's a growing thing. And this year, again, with the database in our organization, it's only going to get bigger.
Some ad space in all the university papers in your area there that's very inexpensive. I really think you guys should get a posting in this week. And, you better get a little posting in these, all these student papers that come out this week, because, you can't really count on flyers. You have to be in the little in their newspaper.
Right.
Events. They have a coming events section usually too. If you put a tiny ad in, they'll let you in there too. So, I was mentioning that to you guys before when I talked to you, because I really want to see it as a success, you know, and those people who can't make it to LA, who are listening, you know, in Brazil or wherever and can't make it for some reason. How about CDs or DVDs? Are you going to have those available afterwards?
Yeah, in conjunction with this, we'll be filming every presentation digitally, which makes it easy to transfer to the internet. We are going to attempt, like we've done in the last 2 years, to broadcast via the video conferencing system that we use called DimDim. And so we're going to have a video video camera there. And if it all works out, that's our idea. If not, we'll have all pretty much everything filmed. Greg is going to be our roving reporter, because he's so good technically with all the people and knows so many of the people.
Excellent.
Going to be going around sort of interviewing, and we're going to make a DVD and also online put these types of interviews, so a person afterwards can see all these. It's one of the things we're trying to, Greg and I, is to organize it. These people, the people in the MPA have been working so many years. They're not necessarily the best at marketing, and they're not the best at organizing these kinds of, you know, production. And so Greg and I are trying to, we're going to bring this all up a level. It's a lot of work, but so if a person's not there, check in and see if you can get on DimDim. We'll have links to that if we are live, so you could go to the website, and during the conference you may be able to sneak in and watch the thing live on the internet.
Is it going to be very expensive on the internet?
No, it's free.
Oh, wow. Free.
Yeah, DimDim is supported by the scientists themselves, and they help pay for that yearly subscription, so that it's sort of the way you can look at it. For $30 a year, we ask people to donate. That's a lot cheaper than going to a conference. If you can't make it, we have some scientists literally up at the Arctic Circle, and if they can't make it, then they can still participate. So the video conference thing
if you're not a scientist and you just want to watch the conference, couldn't you also make a $30 donation to help you out?
Oh yeah, it's a voluntary. You can go in, you don't have to pay anything. You can go in and watch even our video conferencing. Right now we have it open to the public, and that's the idea. So Saturday we'll have a video conference. So
you're appreciative of contributions, so you can advertise more and let more people know about it. And
sure.
That's the way to go. Sure. Yeah, so it's a new world out there for throwing conferences. It's not the same as it was 20 or 30 years ago. So, you know, I've been doing conferences for a couple of decades now, and I'll say I've seen some major changes. And I think the internet is going to help bring the conference venue back to alive like it used to be, you know. 20 years ago, much more vibrant than it has been for the last few years. And I think now with this video conferencing and stuff, it's going to allow promoters to bring in the top talent that they can bring in.
We've even had in the past years, we're not doing it this year because we have so many people attending in person. We've had presentations at our conference over the internet to everybody sitting at the conference, from people from India, from people from Europe. So it is quite a new technology, but as much as video conference has been around, it's still not as accessible as people think. It can be precarious at times, but we've been video conferencing weekly for almost 2 years now. So it's quite a phenomenon. We're booked months in advance for people to do their presentations. So like I said, we're going to try to broadcast in the same way.
This is exciting, but our time is up. So I have to say thank you so much for being my guest this week, and we look forward to seeing you in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And we're going to have a display table there. Come by and see us, where Bill's going to have some of his experiments that he'll be demonstrating, as well as you'll have some of your new material for microwaving dirt and getting precious minerals out of dirt, which is exciting. And I'm looking forward to meeting you all, and lots of blessings. Have a wonderful week, all of you listening around the world, and try and participate in this event in some way. If you're listening to this broadcast after it's happened, you know, in the archives, we'll go there to the website and pick up the DVDs. So blessings to you all.
Greg, thank you.
Excellent.
David,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much. We look forward to seeing you.
Yes.